हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सति गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
सो 16.4 Duties of the husband going abroad. A man who has business abroad may depart after securing a maintenance for his wife. For a wife, even though virtuous, may be corrupted if she be distressed by want of subsistence. The husband went on a journey. After providing for her, the wife shall subject herself to restraints in daily life. But if he departed without providing for her, she may subsist by blameless manual work. So in other words, it should always be taken care of. When the husband is going to go out for any time, then he should see that whatever is necessary then should be left so that the wife will be taken care of. Because otherwise, if it gets difficult, then in that difficulty, then that anxiety then the girl may become distracted from her regular duties and everything like that. So if he's provided for her, then how she would normally live, she will continue to live. But if he didn't provide to her, then she will do something that will secure a maintenance, but it will be within the religious principles. So that's the important thing. You know, she should always try to do something that's not going to go outside of the religious principles. The husband went abroad for some sacred duty. She must wait for him 8 years. If he went to acquire learning or fame, for 6 years. If he went for pleasure, 3 years. That means that long before taking up manual, some kind of other work. She should try to, you know, maintain all those things for that long. So in other words, that's how long he should provide a maintenance for. Right? Because these things, if it goes for some sacred duty, then it takes so much time. Because sometimes they do these big yajnas, or they do some vrata or some other kind of thing. So that takes longer, so that maintenance should be longer. If it is less, then it is less. Each one is then less. So he has to provide the maintenance, and then she should then live according to that. And if there's any time there's questions, just raise them. Dealings with a recalcitrant wife. For 1 year, let a husband bear with a wife who hates him, but after the lapse of a year, let him deprive her of her property and cease to cohabitate with her. Let's see. Have we come across this, the property? We haven't come across that yet. Okay. So then, property probably needs to be described. See, is that the things that have been given to the girl by her parents or relatives, you know, any time in her life, given by friends with affection, what she receives at marriage, all these different times, these are all considered her property. You know, her ornaments, her different gifts she has, furnitures, like we see before, many times they've received maid servants, you know, carriages, whatever it has, that's considered her property. Like that. So then, that property the men can't live off of. They can't take that, sell that, and live from that. And at the same time, if there is a problem, then he may take it away from her. So it reduces the facility. But it doesn't mean he can sell it and do what he wants with it. It just means it's taken away, she doesn't have the facility. Does that make some sense? So it's her property, but at the same time, it's because she's with him, what's hers is his. But he can't live off of it. Right? Does that make some sense there? It's a subtle point. But I think we already came across it. Did we come across the point about if she's working, then whatever money she makes, if she's dependent upon somebody, that's that person's. Right? If she's under the father, then whatever money she makes goes to the father. If she's under the husband or the son, whatever money she makes goes to them. But whatever is given to her as a gift out of affection, that's hers. Right? But if it's work, then it's who she's being maintained by. Does that make some sense? So this way it makes a distinction between the properties here. So in other words, the wife is not very pleased, so then he should bear with that a year. Then that means in so many ways he'll be trying to correct the situation, find out how to make it nice, he said. If that doesn't work, then he can take away her property and then not stay intimately with her. So then if that works, it straightens her out, nice, and if not, then they'll live separately. Like that. That's the principle, yes. Yes. Anything given by the husband, given by her father, given by other relatives, given by friends, it's all because of affection. It's not because of work. Understand? It's just a gift. That's all considered her property. Does that make sense? Whatever she got at the wedding, you know, like these kind of things, all that's, you know, before the wedding, during the wedding, after the wedding, you know, that's all connected there with friends and relatives and well-wishers. All that's considered her property. Like that. So that the men will never use separately. I'm saying the wife will use that to take care of her family. You know, she has furniture, so her family is going to sit on it. Otherwise, what's the use of the furniture? But it's her furniture. The husband can't decide to sell that and make money and maintain the family. That's her stuff. Like that. At the same time is because of that, him being her authority, what is hers is his. Does that make sense? So not for maintenance is it his, but as control. So ultimately, though she runs it, she controls it because it's hers. But if things get out of hand, then if he sees that she's, you know, proud of her possessions or in some way just feels that she's very independent, then he may take those things away. But taking away doesn't mean he could take them and sell them and those kind of things. It just means he takes them away that she doesn't have the facility. Like that. And when there's no facility, it becomes austere, then she'll start to think. Because that's the whole idea of accumulating things, is to create comfort. So as soon as comfort's removed, then one starts to contemplate what's going on. Right? As long as it's comfortable, one may or may not think about it. So this is a situation in which he's not. She who shows disrespect to a husband who is addicted to some evil passion, is a drunkard or diseased, shall be deserted for 3 months and be deprived of her ornaments and furniture. Means she shows disrespect because of these things, and for 3 months he may just stay away from her and take her stuff. And then if that straightens everything out, then it's there. But she who shows aversion towards a mad or outcast husband, a eunuch, one destitute of manly strength, or one afflicted with such diseases as punishment crimes, shall neither be cast off nor deprived of her property. Right? Because this means that it's natural. If the husband is like this, then he has nothing to say. Like that. So then in that case, if she is not favorably inclined towards that the husband with these difficulties or these qualities, then she can't be punished. She can't be corrected. These things happen. You know, the point is that see, you're trying to get to a particular level of interaction, rasa. See, there's a principle. If you have a service attitude here, you'll have a service attitude in the spiritual world. There's no question you won't have a service attitude here and you'll be great there. Like the devotee that thinks all these devotees, they can't stand them, they're all got so many bad qualities, this, that. they'll never be able, one, to go to the spiritual world, and if they did, they'd find the same problems in the spiritual world. You know what I'm saying? Because the problem is perception. Does that make sense? So let us say someone who you had extreme affection for, and they fell into some bad habit. How would you deal with it? You'd reject them, or you would try to somehow or another change from them from that course of activity? Yes. So now, what does this mean? If she's showing disrespect, does that mean that there's affection? No. So that's the whole point. The attitude is wrong. So because the attitude's wrong there, how she's going to deal with anything else? Because here it looks like it's a matter of justice. What if the girl's son dies? Right? And then if she has this attitude, then it's a matter of justice. Should her son have died? Right? Will the woman think, my son died, that's just? No. So whose fault is it? Who will she blame? Who's she going to blame? Nobody. Who's in control of everything? Right. So that's the point. It'll directly go there. So that's why they have to work this out. Then they can handle when the material world doesn't go nice for them, and then they'll surrender to God rather than blame God. So these are very subtle points. If you look at this simply from the justice thing, then yes, so many difficulties will be there. But the point is we're trying to go back to Godhead. We're trying to get out of the material world. Right? Because the point is here, addicted to some evil passion, is drunk or diseased. What if the wife is diseased? Right? I know a God brother, his wife is bedridden. His main service he does is just take care of his wife. I haven't met another person who'll do that. And this has been going on for the last, I don't know, 18, 20 years. Right? And how do you describe evil passion? You know what I'm saying? Women don't get addicted to anything. So then on the same way as then the husband would dump the wife. So the whole thing is here it just becomes too easy. Means here you're working on the extremities of fabulous or disgusting. Right? So that's always the difficulty. The women will tend to move between these two extremes. He's either great or he's useless. Right? It's never that it's just, you know, it works, it's great, you know. But it's always these extremes. So these things have to be controlled. You know? So it's just part of the principle is that the man has those problems, that's his problem, his personal problem. But it doesn't mean that those problems may have anything to do with here. He's not saying he's dealing with it badly. You know? He may have something, but that's something there. But then he'll deal here. Otherwise, then she thinks she's superior because she's more moral. But then, okay, maybe on that platform it's more moral, but what about on the platform of rationale? Or of ego? These are higher principles. So if the husband's higher there than the lower, why should he tolerate that? You know what I'm saying? So then how do you judge these things? So the whole point is one can't just stay on the platform of the feminine perspective and that's it, and just what's good for that and that's all. The feminine perspective only has meaning when it's connected to the masculine principle. Right? So ultimately that means Krishna. And to that degree we're connected to the material world, and that means that masculine principle comes through men of this world. So then the principles have to remain intact. The father's taking care, the husband will take care, the son will take care, Krishna will take care. Right? But you'll see girls who don't trust their father, don't trust their husbands, they don't trust their sons, and they don't trust Krishna. You can ask. You just go ahead, ask. We know he's men, we've got to be independent, we've got to take care, but then what about God? They don't trust him either. So that's the whole thing. It's one principle. The male-female principle is one principle. It has different applications. Does that make sense? Just like cooking is one principle. You can apply the same things on cooking vegetables, on cooking sweets, on cooking grains, or cooking different kinds of cuisines. But the principles are the same, right? Does that make sense? So that's what's going on here, is that there's something so much deeper that's happening. Is we're trying. That's what Manu is about, is the connection between the material duties and God. That's why they've gone to Brahma. Otherwise they could go to someone else and ask. But they've gone to Brahma because Brahma is heard directly from Krishna. He's heard directly from Krishna how to, what these duties are. So when you hear it from Krishna, then you know how to connect it to Krishna. Like Krishna explains directly to Arjuna in the Gita. And in there, he's always showing how to connect it all to him. Right? So that's what is going on in here. But because this is not paravidya, or transcendental knowledge, therefore it is written in such a way that those who are not interested in transcendence can also benefit. Does that make some sense? Like that. Well, things like the Gita Bhagavatam are only written for transcendentalists. So they don't bother with cloaking the language so it sounds pleasant for mundane people. Right? It just is very direct. But all the other scriptures, Vedic literatures, other than, you know, what is in pursuance directly of transcendence, then they're written for everybody. So that everybody will at least follow God's law, God's culture, you know, God's social systems, God's, you know, the way that people are supposed to act, eat, dress, live, you know, perform sacrifice, charity, austerity. Right? So then it's written in such a way that they can see, you can look at this verse just directly from the external meaning. But it's got to be seen in connection with Krishna, otherwise what's the use for us? The point is if one can handle dealing with husband that has these difficulties and still try to give that support in that, then one can handle Krishna. Right? Because otherwise, if you want to bring forth a case of justice, right, Krishna's off with 16,108 ladies. Right? So one might find that a bit extreme. You know? And that's in Dwarka. Then you go to Vrindavan, not only is he with 16,108, but they're not even his wives. He's not even married, he's a brahmachari. Not only is he off with them, he makes an arrangement to be with one, but he's with another. Right? So if you're into justice, you're not going to like Krishna. So these are all principles to pull in and direct the feminine nature in a proper way. Because the point is it should be used to advantage. And if not, then what's the use? Right? You know, if it's not used for advantage, then what's the benefit? You know what I'm saying? Because the point is as long as one is conditioned, one is going to think and act like a woman. One wants, and one is liberated, one can go beyond that. Right? But even the liberated woman, her body's still going to move like a woman. She may not think like one. Not mundane, spiritual, yes. But material. So until that comes, the modes of nature still work in that way. It's just the way it is. It still works. Therefore, these are written in such a way that it perfectly brings the feminine nature in line so that it's an advantage rather than a disadvantage. Right? Because if you take self-centeredness, you take motivation, you take material attachment, none of these are progressive. No one will say they're good. Even non-devotees won't say they're good. understandable maybe, but not good, right? So that's the raw state, right? Because here you're not dealing with the pure feminine nature. You're dealing with feminine nature that is touched by the Purusha mood, the masculine mood. So it's Purusha Shakti. So it is feminine mood that has the masculine. It's the femininity with a masculine mood. You know what I'm saying? Does that make some sense? So Radharani is dressing nicely and is so excited to meet Krishna because there is standards of beauty, and they've dressed her nicely. She looks beautiful. So that will be very pleasing to Krishna, because boys like to look at beautiful girls, right? So it's not because of her, it's because it will please Krishna. It's different, though it looks the same as here. But here the girl is dressing nicely because boys like to look at them. But by looking at them, then she'll get benefit from it. Right? He has to pay. He wants to look, he paid. Does that make some sense? So that's the whole thing. The spiritual world, there's no pay. So that's the difference. That's real feminine nature. What's here is not actually pure feminine nature. It will move and act and everything like it was, as if it is, but because of the drop of desire to control and enjoy, it takes on a different thing that just doesn't work. Externally, it'll do all the things the same, but there's an underlying mood that's different, and it can't work. So all these things bring it in line that at least externally has the form, so that the living entities can get the experience of that man-woman interaction, that they can feel that they've done it, and they've gotten whatever can be gotten from it, and whatever can be gotten from it isn't worth it. It's much more worth it to surrender fully to Krishna and go back to Godhead. Does that make sense? So that comes by, you either hear about it and decide yes, or you see it and you understand, or you have to be involved in it, then you understand. Does that make sense? So there's much deeper things that are going on here. This is not a matter of modern equality or rights or this or that. That's all nonsense. Because the point is it's the experience. If gain and safety are the only thing to get out of it, then okay, she has her money. She has her facilities. Right? So what? Right? Can you imagine a woman will be happy? Okay, she's got a big position down at the firm. She makes tons of money. She has a fabulous house, cars, everything you'd ever want in the house, and furniture and other facilities, but no family and no friends. And she can sit in that house all day alone and enjoy it. She'll be satisfied? Never. Because they have to share. So all that's for that. So if that's all there is, then what's the meaning? So all this thing of justice is only for the principle of gain and safety. I can go out and get it myself. It's mine. I can do what I like, how I like, when I like. Okay, great. But what about your interaction with others? And if the interaction isn't good, who cares about the position and the money and this and that? You know what I'm saying? That's the point. Is the man, who he is who he is. Sometimes if he's stupid, he'll throw away everything for a woman. And he'll be called stupid, even by the women. Oh, romantic, but stupid. Nice sentiment, but stupid. Right? But a woman who will throw away everything she has for a relationship with a man is never considered stupid. You know what I'm saying? It's just like nobody considers it glorious that Edward stepped down for a divorcee and moved to America. Right? King of the most powerful empire in the world stepped down for a divorcee of a woman who later on dumped him anyway. It's never considered romantic. It's considered stupid. But there's so many stories of women having so many different positions, this, that, giving it all up for affection for some men, and it's considered glorious. Because that's the way the nature works, the male-female principle works. So Manu is showing how to bring it in line, and these are things when things start to go wrong. So there's something behind it. The man is who he is, the woman follows the man. So he has these qualities he may have. The woman has these qualities that takes her away from her relationships. Right? Man has these qualities, you know, then in the beginning they won't take away. You know? If it gets too extreme, it does. But they're brought around by affection. Because the connection between the man and the woman is affection. Or emotion. So if she just deals in a cut and dry way, that's the way he deals with other men. So if you want the man to deal with you in a cut and dry way, go for it. But I think a woman dealing cut and dry and a man dealing cut and dry, the one who gets cut is the woman. Because men can handle it. That's what they do all day. You go out and work all day, that's all you do all day. Is work in an emotionless atmosphere. Women don't work in an emotionless atmosphere. So the thing is on that level, then it comes to, it's when it comes to working in a field of no emotion, then the women will always lose. Doesn't matter who she is, how big she is, and that, they all break down. They all break down. Even Laura Croft breaks down. Tough as she is, she breaks down. Like that. But you have in the emotional field, then that's where then the men are the weak ones. So that's the field. If the women want to get them, they can get them bad there. Yeah. But in the emotionless field, then that's not the restraint. So that's the thing. If they take this here, you take out the relationship, then she becomes tough. That's okay. But if you reverse that, they won't be able to handle it. You know, so it looks like, hey, you know, she should be like this. But if she has a problem and you reverse the role, then you say, no, you've got to understand, you've got to be supportive, you've got to help, you've got to... You know what I'm saying? But if it's the man, it's just, hey, cut the guy away. So who's this guy think he is? No, but the point is rasa works. It has to be like that. Therefore, is in looking at this, justice isn't big enough. Because justice is only pranamoy. Right? You have to go to the platform. And it's not pure rasa. You know what I'm saying? The senses are pure rasa. The emotions are pure rasa. And devotion is pure rasa. But morality, justice, and liberation, those aren't. Those are junctions. In between the senses and religion is artha. Right? You understand? Means you use religion. By religion, you're going to get artha. Anyone can just sit there with the money all day, or they got to spend it on something, which means results in kama, the senses. So it's only a bridge between religion or emotion and the senses. It's not on its own pure rasa. It's not at all. Though people try to make it that way, but good luck. It doesn't work. The moralists stand there alone. They're dry, they're hard-hearted. All they talk about, you know, this and that, they're the hardest, nastiest people around. You know? And the same way is between religion and transcendence or bhakti. You have liberation. Liberation's not rasa. You know what I'm saying? So the only difference is one is getting out of the material world, and one is trying to say that the material world actually has some real substance, right? It means this is good, this is bad, and that has real value. While liberation, it's the opposite. then it doesn't have any value. Does that make sense? So rasa is only tasted on the sensual, emotional, and devotional platforms. Morality, it seems like it's emotion, but it's not really. It's not really. It gets people fired up, you know, but at the end of the day, they're out there in their emotion, they're out there in their boat, you know, their little Greenpeace boat, and, you know, sitting there, and there's the big ship coming, and this and that. And, you know, push comes to shove, they're not just all just standing there and being very moral. They're holding on to each other in either, you know, some kind of fear or ecstasy. But it becomes physical contact or emotional contact. That you can't live in the field of justice and morality. It's not a field of rasa. So that's the point. Does that make some sense? That's why it can be applied, because it's one of five levels of consciousness. But it being the exclusive center, it being a starting point, is not good. Religion can be a starting point. The best is transcendence is the starting point. But as far as a conditioned soul, religion can be the starting point of activity that can get them to transcendence. You know, get them into the devotional realm. Right? But if your relationship's here, you can appreciate rasa, you know, then you can appreciate there. That's the whole point, is one form of rasa. That's why a karmi is considered better than a jnani, as far as taking up devotional service. Because a karmi accepts relationships, interactions, all these different kinds of things. The maya body doesn't. So how are you going to show to him that, you know, here's the supreme rasa and all this interaction? He just thinks it's weird. Because they've rejected all that. But the karmi can see, yes, this is mundane, that's spiritual, that's real, this is not. That people are satisfied. Here, people aren't satisfied. So they discriminate between the transcendental and that. But the principle of accepting rasa is there. You know, dynamic, interactive rasa. And they distinguish that there's a superiority of bhakti rasa over emotional rasa over sensual rasa. But it's the same principle. Does that make sense? Is that okay? So like that, you have to see is that there's something that, look, just inquire, try to figure out what is the principle behind it. If this goes back to that same one of aslishya bhavapada rakamati nashkama, like that, it goes back to that. It's just another form of that. You know, we had the verse before that was saying. Okay, marriage arrangements for girls. 16.6. To a distinguished, handsome suitor of equal caste, should a father give his daughter in accordance with the prescribed rule, though she have not attained the proper age? Okay. So here we see is that the father should be making an arrangement of somebody who he feels is suitable. Right? Then, of equal nature. Here it says caste, we understand it as nature. Like that. Does that make sense? Because birth is not the important thing. It's the actual practical nature. It means the nature should be similar. If the natures are similar, then their interaction will be very nice. If they're not similar, then they'll be very hard to find common ground to have interaction. There's no interaction, there's no rasa. And then it says, a distinguished, handsome suitor. Distinguished, so that means he must have good qualities. Right? If he doesn't have good qualities, what's the use? And handsome should mean he's nice looking, because the girl is nice looking, so then the boy should be nice. You know, so it should match. Like that. You know, because the young boys and girls, and they're happy with what each other looks like, you know. Like that. Though she has not attained the proper age means that even before the arrangement is fully ready, then it can be working in that direction. Like that. See, there's a difference is that The main point in the Vedic is responsibility. The modern is to enjoy. So the point is you can enjoy so much out of youth than duty. I mean, than duty. Duty, it's on a different platform than enjoyment. There is the mode of goodness. So then that relationship becomes based on that mode of goodness. That interaction is based on goodness. And so that emotion can always be appreciated. But it may or may not be centrally strong. Emotions are strong, senses will also be strong. But the principle is that works in goodness. In passion, then passion is result. Result is senses. So therefore, then, if you restrict them, they have to be dutiful and all that, it restricts the senses. Therefore, if things are let to go a little wild, no one complains. The girl's been through 20, 30, 50, 100 boys, it doesn't matter. No one will say anything in the modern scenario. You know, until she finds the true love. But what is that based on? So it's just a matter of two ways. Girl can get sense gratification, boy can get sense gratification. It's thought the girl is more free, but actually it's the boys that get advantage. Because the point is the girl is looking for that gain and safety. Boy is not looking for gain and safety. He's looking for sense gratification. Girl thinks by giving herself she'll get gain and safety, but then that one breaks down and then the next and breaks the next thing. So therefore there's a difference. So no one's trained to be dutiful. And then suddenly when you get married, you find you have duties to perform, but no one's ever really told you about that. It's not talked about. But the Vedic, it's all duty. You have a duty towards the husband, you have a duty towards the wife, you have a duty towards your parents, towards your children, towards your community, towards the Lord. So that means a girl, before she's attained puberty, she's mature. Like that. Girls don't get that kind of like middle spaced out point. But, you know, if you deal properly, they don't go like boys, that they have this kind of spaciness. They're very together. You can see, I've seen girls that are 9 years old, chant 16 rounds, do everything perfectly. No problem. It's not just one or two. You know, as a class, they can easily do it. They're just more focused than everything. Boys, no. You know, what you see there at girl at 9, you start catching a boy at 19. You know, individuals may be determined before that. You see some glimmer at 14. You know, but it's really serious at that time. So, there's slight difference. So if they're trained properly, they're experts. You know, just like you have this principle of, in the tradition, after the marriage happens at the girl's house. So then, after they spend 3 days at the girl's house, and the fourth day they leave the girl's house and then go to the boy's house. And then when they get to the boy's house and everybody's met each other, they've had the reception and the party's over, you know, and everybody goes and it's down to the family again, then we have the what do you call it? The program where the new girl in the family, she has to cook for the family. Right? Then they get to see what she knows. Right? So that's the thing, is here you have here a young girl against women who've been cooking their whole life. You know, the 60-year-old women, the 40-year-old women, the 20-year-old, the 80-year-old women. And they're all going to look, and they're not kind to each other. So that's a big thing. So they're getting married like when they're 12. That means by the time they're 12, they have to be fabulous cooks. And every girl does it. That means it's possible. Right? It's not going to be arranged according to tradition, something that women can't do. Right? because the tradition is very kind to the, in that field. Does that make sense? So the point is a girl by that age can be very, very expert and very, very mature. But that depends upon the culture. If the culture is geared like that, it works. And in the modern culture, then it's just an excuse. They don't want to get serious, and nobody considers they have to get serious. But then one day, push comes to shove, and there they are. They don't know how to cook, wouldn't know how anything about a baby, which end of the baby the diaper goes on, nothing. And there they have. They have a kid, they have a house, they have a husband, they got bills to pay. They wouldn't know what's going on. And they're alone. And so, according to the Vedic tradition, that's unkind. That's unfair. So they're trained from the beginning what it means. What is married life? What is going to be? What are your duties? How to deal with those duties? How to deal with these situations? How to take care of kids? You find in your decent families, or in any family, you know, where there's family members and they interact and duty is important. Your 6-8-year-old girls, they know perfectly how to take care of babies. They know how to hold them, sit them, put them to sleep, wake them up, bathe them, change everything. They can do it. And you've been doing that your whole life. Then when you have your own, then it's easy. Right? Because somehow or another, babies don't look exactly like Barbie. You know? Like that. So, but, you know, in the traditional cultures, they don't need dolls. They got younger brothers, sisters, and cousins and all that to deal with. They're much more fun. You know? Much more fun. I remember it was a new thing when I was a kid. They always had the regular dolls, and then they had this new doll that you can feed it water, and then it'll wet its diapers, so you get to change it. You know, it was like that was a new thing. That was big. So you can't get better than a real baby. You know, you feed it, and it'll do more than wet its diapers. You know, it can really, you know. So and the little girl, it's fun. So if it's been a game for them, it's fun for them, when they have their own and they're really attached, then it's even more nice. So that's the whole thing, is that therefore it means before that, because whatever is said, girls think in that way. There's a boy, they like the first boy they get attracted to. They're thinking about how it's going to go, family, this, that. The boy doesn't. He just, it's nice being with the girl. Maybe you can touch her. The girl is not like that. Touch is another thing. He'll let her touch her because he thinks, I'll get, you know, we'll get, you know, all this whole grihastha scene. So, it's a difference. So therefore you find the Vedic, therefore it's considered in this way. Therefore it says, even though she may not have obtained, means already things are being lined up for her. Because they were dutiful, the boys were dutiful, the families were dutiful, they worked. People can say what they like, they don't work and all that. They've been working for millions of years here in India by people who know how to operate them. Like that. Don't know how to operate, then say that. It's not considered culture that you don't know and then you blame the system. That's that. You don't know how to operate, just say, we don't know how to do it. And then to say, we don't know how to do it and we're happy to be in ignorance. Great, okay. But then, we don't know how to do it, then let's figure out how to do it. At least the principle is, okay, legally the girls don't get married that good. But still, the principle is I've seen 18 girls, they still don't know what's going on. You know, they wouldn't know how to boil water without burning it, you know. It's just, they don't know. So, and you have an extra 6 years. Still they don't know. So, okay, we're not very expert, we don't know how to train. So instead of having 12 years to train them, you got 18 years to train them. You know? And if they're going farther in their education, they go into the 20s, that's 20 years. Still they don't know. Right? I heard about a menu that someone was eating the other day. cucumber salad. What was it? Potato sabji and dal. Right? There's not one Indian in the world who would ever agree that is a human diet. Never agree. What does the dal go with? What does the sabji go with? Okay, the salad's on its own. But they would never agree this is a diet. This is a diet. I've seen a feast. Two kinds of salads, raw salads. Two kinds of chutneys. Two kinds of pakoras. And that was a feast where the person was so excited that they invited 30 people over their house. Right? So this is the difficulty, because they don't know how to do these things. So it just won't be agreed. You know? I'm talking about menus that are put together by, 40-year-old women. Like that. I'm not talking about something, for 8-year-olds to get together and, hey, let's, have a mud pie and we'll have, like this, So that's the thing, is they just don't know what is food, how it works, what is culture. You grow up like that, it fills the stomach. I remember, if I could just eat sweets when I first joined the movement. I could easily just eat sweets. But after a while, being in India and regular diet, you can't eat just sweets. There has to be some salty. But here they can just eat sweets. Yeah, that's fine. No problem. But so it's a matter of training. Then the things start to work. So if it's accepted, then you start to work for it. The point is perfection is being Krishna conscious. Perfection is doing everything for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So the externals really don't matter. For Krishna, it doesn't really matter. He went to, what was his name? Shrutadev? That Brahmin? Krishna went out of his way to go see this one king and this one Brahmin. He just went to this one out-of-the-way place just to see these two devotees. So the king took care of him in all kingly opulence, and the Brahmin was so excited, that's the story when he goes there, that all he had in the house was bananas. And he and his wife started peeling the bananas, and in their ecstasy, they're throwing away the bananas and giving Krishna the peel, and Krishna's eating them. So ultimately, it's bhakti. But the point is that if they actually understood that they were giving peels, they wouldn't think, well, that's fine. Krishna, he's eating them, But the point is that story is to show that it's the bhakti that really counts. Then whatever it is, it doesn't matter the craziest menu, cooked in the craziest way, if it's done with devotion, Krishna will eat it. And the nicest, most proper, orthodox menu, not done with devotion, Krishna is not interested. That, of course, we understand. But the principle is that you do a nice thing with devotion, then that's very good. Because then you're considering, what does Krishna like? Right? It's a common question. You like somebody, you try to find out what their favorite food is. Right? So that whenever there's a special occasion, you try to give that to them. No? So then you find out what is Krishna like. It's just natural. It's a natural sign of affection. Does this make sense? So these points are being made to make us think and try our best. You know what I'm saying? And if we're doing our best, Krishna is pleased. That's the whole point. Okay. But we should never rationalize, it doesn't matter. That's not good, because it doesn't work like that. It doesn't matter. Okay, then that means the wife can put together anything, this dhoti with this border and that funny shirt there and this other funny bead bag. Well, if she doesn't have one of his bead bags, she can use one of her bead bags. It doesn't matter, Guru. We're all trying to say, we don't care about the rules. He's not going to wear it. You know what I'm saying? What's the E? Well, I don't know. We don't got much. So what do we got here? Well, we got some ghee and we got some corn flakes. So let's put those together. Why not? It's not going to be eaten. So that's the whole point, is people may say it doesn't matter. But you go into their life and it matters very much. Exactly which toothpaste they use, what soap they use, what dhoti they use, what the bead bag looks like, how they set up the whole, everything matters, down to the last detail. But when it comes to Krishna, oh, nothing matters. So that's the whole idea, is that we're trying to break that mentality. Because it's not the form, it's where does the attachments lie. Because for ourselves, everything is there because of attachment. Right? But what's happened is the whole problem is love for Krishna, or attachment to Krishna, has transformed into lust, or material attachment. So what will be seen is material attachment is normal. It's just the way it is. You know, and if you don't accept that, you're a fanatic. But then the principle of getting to transcendental attachment, you know, it's like, yeah, that's my goal, but what's your plan? How are you going to connect it to it? Kind of like it'll just happen. You walk out of your house and get hit by a lightning bolt and then psh, pure devotee, or, you know, I mean, how does it work, you know? Like that. So there's got to be some plan to get material attachment retransformed back into spiritual attachment. So lust has to go back to love. So the whole thing is to wake us up to the point that that's what is having to go on. So things like these rules or other things, they're there to create that thought and to create that change. That's what they're for. Does that make sense? You have to use something. Just like, okay, you want to sit down and have a conversation with somebody. Right? You don't know them. Then how do you communicate? Right? Let's say you meet a person you've never met before and you want to communicate with them. What's the conversation? What does it go around? What are the standard things? Ask them? Yeah, questions about themselves. But any old question? You know, what shoes do you wear? Or, you know, what toilet paper do you prefer? Or, you know what I'm saying? They're very standard stuff. Where are they from? What do they do? Talk about the weather. You know, it's pretty standard stuff that won't get you into trouble. And it's every culture of the world is like that. So that means any person from any part of the world, any sort of, you could meet someone else and start off that kind of conversation like that. So is the weather actually their point? No. The point is to communicate. That's used as a medium. But you have to have a medium. So these social rules aren't the point. They're a medium for transferring our material attachment to spiritual attachment. That's what we're for. Does that make sense? So that's why we should never become distressed if our external form of our life doesn't look like what's on these pages. Because the point is it's a medium. So we try to do our best to come as close as possible, you know, because it's a good medium. Other mediums may or may not be so great. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so then here's the in this section is the main point here. But the maiden, though marriageable, should rather stop in the father's house until death than that he should ever give her to a man destitute of good qualities. So the point is the Vedic culture, girls all get married. Right? They should marry someone of equal nature, you know, good character, like this. But this point is made here. But if that such a boy cannot be found, better she just stays in her father's house the rest of her life than marry someone who's not qualified. Like that. There'll be less problem because the relationship with the father is good. He'll take care of her. But you get the husband that's not good, then it's just going to cause misery for the boy, the girl, and both families. You know? And the same principle applies. better to not get married than marry a bad girl. You know? But here you just have to say it from this side, you know, because it naturally applies the opposite. Okay, then, so that is the principle of who she should marry, and if such a person isn't found, better not to get married. Like that. In this case, you know, something's not necessarily better than nothing. You know what I'm saying? I mean, something has to be of a standard. You know, because they'll never be up to what you really want, right? Like that. But, you know, as they always say, Romeo and Juliet make great copy, but they're both dead. Romeo and Juliet never had to pay bills. They never had to change diapers. They never had to, you know, vacuum the rug or, you know, mow the lawn. Because they're dead, it makes a great story. Right? Right? And they got together and rode off into the sunset and lived happily ever after. You never hear about paying the bills, you know, washing the clothes, none of it. So that always is the thing, is that, so this principle is there. So then, now here are some details about that arrangements, right? Those are the principles, those two verses. Now here's details. 3 years let a damsel wait, though she be marriageable, but after that time let her choose for herself a bridegroom of equal caste and rank. So in other words, the father has to arrange the marriage. If he hasn't arranged by the time she's marriageable, then she can wait 3 years to give the father the time. But after that, then through her own offices, she can choose. This doesn't mean she goes out in the street and, you know, and sits there and swings the chain and goes, "Hi, big boy." You know, it doesn't work like that. You know, it means that she finds someone suitable like her father would be doing. Does that make sense? And so then, but then the same point is who she finds should be, I forgot about the chewing gum, right? So then the boy should be approved of by the father, right? Because remember before we had 8 kinds of marriages, 4 approved by the father, 4 are not. So it still has to be approved by the father to be considered a high grade, like that. But what it means is she, through her offices, makes arrangements. You know, like Rukmini, she sent her, you know, how you say, he had a Brahmin messenger. So through him, she's making the arrangements. She's heard from her friends about the qualities of Krishna. Then through her offices, she makes the contact. And she makes the arrangement. You know, if she accepts, then, you know, meet me here at this time. Like that. And so then, because the Kshatriya is then the Rakshasa marriage, he carries her off. Because it's a swayamvara. So like that means that the point is she may make the arrangements. But that's still considered better than the boy's side making the arrangements. Because the girl being attached to the boy will be a stronger relationship than the boy is attached to the girl. Girls like being approached because it makes them feel good, wanted. But you don't respect as much the guy who's approached you as the one that the girl wants. Right? So many boys are coming and approaching the girl. They don't mean as much as the one boy that the girl likes. And generally, she likes the one that doesn't approach her. You know? So that's why it's considered a higher grade marriage than the one where the boy approaches. You know? Okay. What should she do if she doesn't respect? It means ultimately it goes back to duty. Because, see, duty is the most directly convertible into emotion. So it's going to be the most compatible platform for the woman's nature. Right? So it's the natural field in which the common ground that all members of the society can relate on. Because senses, everyone has a different opinion. You know, like that. Intellect, they have different opinion. But emotion, based on duty, that everyone can have common ground. So it's the most effective method of holding together a community, is common values. Does that make sense? So the value is that this is a religious institution, and it's supposed to work within that religious institution. It's religious because it's being done as a sacrifice for the Lord. Within that, each has their duties. You perform those duties properly, even though there may not be great affection for the other person or respect. It'll work. It may not be great, may not be ecstasy, but it will work. Does that make sense? But if that aspect, the two will be able to live together without killing each other, you know. And basically, they could, you know, the family could be raised and all those kind of things. If it seemed to be not a good situation, they can always not have children. The point is generally that if it's a good working relationship, it's sober, the children will grow up fine. They'll feel it's stable environment. So duty will work. And from duty, because you work together in that, then they can always give, it naturally would give rise to attachment. Right? Unless there's something else that's there that creates a problem. But otherwise, anything you deal with that works, you get attached to it. Right? Just like in the kitchen. You always have your favorite pot or favorite spoon or favorite knife. Or why? Just because it looks good? It's the best looking knife or the best looking pot or the best looking spoon? No, it's the one that works the best. You know what I'm saying? So, because in the kitchen, it's not a social scene. Right? Maybe when you go out, it's things that look good, though they don't necessarily work. You know? But, you know, in your kitchen, it's things that work, not necessarily that look good. So, it's just automatic that anything you deal with, that the working relationship works, you get attached to. So that's the Vedic principle. It's based on duty. The boy and girl have never seen each other, but because of the inherent attraction between boy and girl, and the principle of the jiva gets attached to anything it works with and gets a good experience with. That's the nature of jiva, because it's energy. Shakti is female. Therefore, then you follow those duties, then between that combination, the boy-girl with duties, then it's basically guaranteed there'll be the attraction and attachment. So it'll be a nice experience. Does that make sense? And if they follow their duties and everything goes nicely, then after a lifetime of nice duties, then they will see, as comparing that to spiritual happiness, then it doesn't compare. You know? You do the duties perfectly for 20 years and you're getting perfect results, but then if you compare that perfect result with the result of a nice kirtan or other association with devotees and things, a nice class, then you start to see, hey, it's not the same. And then the mind, therefore, will get attracted to the other. Because much of the time, the mind is attracted to material things only because we have the idea we're supposed to be. It's supposed to be good. Everybody says it's great. Right? If you get this particular clothes or eat this, you're supposed to be happy. So people do it and then they think, I must be happy. You know? It's just like you had Dronacharya's kid and he'd never tasted milk. So the kids, you know, mixed up some chalk and some water. So his wife gave it to him and said, hey, here, this is milk, drink it. He's in ecstasy. Yeah, I've tasted milk. Yeah, it's like, because everybody says milk's great. So now it's supposed to be great. It wasn't milk, but, you know, because the mind thinks this is supposed to be great. Does that make sense? So, much of the time it's not that that interaction material platform is actually of any good caliber. But we need to pull the lock on it. It's not that it that there's anything there of any substance, but we've heard about it so long, and it's supposed to be good, right? Everybody says boy and girl get together and sit down together and get into it. It's supposed to be great, right? That's what they say. Everybody says it's supposed to be great. You know, now whether it was great or whether it's just because everybody said it was great, and so therefore your mind projects that it's got to be good, and so therefore then you say it's great. There's also the element they don't want to be fools. Everybody else said it was great, you know, so then you say, yeah, it was great, but each one there thought it was terrible. You know. So that's the... Therefore you have that principle, is that there. So after 20, 30 years, you can't fool yourself anymore. You can see that, okay, I've done all of that, and I did all the things the mind said are supposed to be great, but they're okay, but they don't satisfy. So they're not actually great. Does that make sense? That's why it's not just one time. In someone who just coming in contact, hearing, just saying like that, immediately they pull out, that's a very special people. You know, therefore you see the acharyas, they get involved with these things for just very short time. But people will take lifetimes, they do in a few years. Yeah. Raghunath Das, his father, his uncles would make 2 million gold coins a year. Right? So you're talking billions of dollars, billions every year. And that's back then when you lived in a natural surrounding, most everything you need just grows right there. You don't even have to buy it. You know. So what do they do with the money? That's how much money he has. His wife was said to be more beautiful than the goddess of, than Indra's wife. So he had, in comparison, more wealth and more opulence, more beautiful wife than Indra and his sister. Indra's on the heavenly planet, so he has a little bit more. But comparatively speaking, what everybody's got here, he had way beyond. And he performed his duties nicely, he was a good husband, did everything nicely, but no interest. Right? And so as soon as he could, then he left the situation. Vishwanath. Then he's married, very beautiful wife, very qualified. So then he's not, you know, means they're great friends. No children, so they're saying, hey, you got to fulfill her need, you know. And so Vishwanath, he takes it, the real need is Krishna consciousness. So then they've told the girl that, you know, he's agreed. So she arranges, decorates herself, everything like that. So she comes to, you know, the evening to bed and that, and she's all prepared for this kind of intimacy. And he's prepared that, you know, give her the real, real need. And so he sits there the whole night describing to her, you know, Bhagavatam and reading Bhagavatam and giving the essence, you know, the purports, the most essential points out of the Bhagavatam to her for the whole night. At one point she falls asleep. When she falls asleep, he splits. So he's fulfilled a need, and now he can go. So, like that. You know, and then they don't, after going out, after a couple of years, marry somebody else. Right? You know, they, you know, it's just because they're on a different platform. So for the average person, then one is given 20, 30 years to figure it out. That is Shruti Sukhat. Right? Shruti means hearing, and Sukhat means enjoyment. It's been heard about. Everybody talks about it that you'll enjoy. Who does enjoy? Right? You'll notice it's all like that. It's only attachment you keep going, but it's not that you're getting anything, right? You're really hungry. The prasadam has been cooked very well. The environment's really good. You feel very comfortable. Those first few bites that you take, you really notice them in that. But then after that, you know, you're already full, but you want to keep going because of the taste. But if you really notice, the amount that you're actually perceiving of the taste is very small compared to what it was in the beginning. But the mind thinks, I'm getting that now, but if you look, it's not. Does that make any sense? So that's what then you have 30 years to work out. Is that the mind will say, yes, yes, this is really great. Great milk, great milk. But, you know, in reality, well, no, it's chalk powder. It's not milk. Milk's something else. So happiness is there, yes, but not here. It's in the spiritual world. So therefore, the mind has a doubt. So then all this whole social system is there to relieve us of that doubt. But you won't know unless you've gone through it. Does that make sense? Right? Someone is married, it doesn't work. Then it's like, it was that person. You get another person. Well, then that should work. But that doesn't work. It's that person. You go to the next person like this. You just keep going. So you can't really say that you had a relationship that really worked, that you figured it out. Of course, if you're smart, then you can put it all together and figure out, hey, there's a pattern here. You know? You know, they all act in the same way, and that's, so there is a principle, it's man is man, woman is woman. So by intelligence you can work it out. And from that then throw the whole thing out. So then there's no disadvantage to any situation. But it's just very easy, is that you're with one person, it works. Right? And it's going nicely, and everything that you are expecting is basically you're getting, and all these things, and all the things you're supposed to be happy with, you have. And then you see, but you're not really happy. A good kirtan's much better. You know? So then you figure out, hey, something's going on here. So then the mind at Vanapras can fully turn to Krishna. Or however earlier it happens. Does that make some sense? So that's why it's recommended you follow these, then it'll go nicely for you. Problem is if your determination is not great to go back to Godhead, then when things go nice, you forget Krishna. That's the way the demigods are. That's the way the demigods are. The demigods, their situation is very nice, and because of that, they forget Krishna. Then, even when the demons come, they don't remember Krishna immediately. You know, unless it's really obvious. But generally, they go out in their prowess and they go to fight, and only when they see they can't defeat the demon, then they go running to Krishna. Right? So that they ultimately do go to Krishna, therefore they're called suras, or devotees. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing. They're called devotees because they turn. The demons never turn to Krishna. It didn't work out this way, then they'll try again that way, try again this way, try, and they'll always try to do. Does that make sense? So that's the principle that's going on. It's what the devotee surrenders, but he may not immediately. So that's why it's a danger. That's why we leave it up to Krishna. We don't hanker that it'll go great and good. We just do these because these are our duties. We do them. Whatever result we get, great. Whatever result, if it's good, nice. If it's bad, then what to do? That's the principle. Right? Then that's more advanced. The demigods, they do their duties and they'll enjoy it. Okay. But in any case, it's all connected to Krishna. That's the main principle. Right? If not being given in marriage, she herself seeks a husband. She incurs no guilt, nor does the he who she weds. In other words, if she makes the arrangement, it's not sin. It's not sin. Like that, some could say, this is not proper, the father has to arrange, but he's had the time. And he hasn't arranged. She's past the time of marriageable age where she wants to be and needs to be married. He hasn't arranged. So then she can make. If she finds, then no problem. You know, but it still is based on that first one. You know, a qualified person of equal nature. It's still based on that principle. No, it's not just anything that walks by. A maiden who chooses for herself shall not take with her any ornaments given by her father or mother or brothers. If she carries them away, it would be theft. Yeah, in other words, this is specific. It doesn't mean all the gifts and stuff she has. This means that the family, generally, they know the girl's going to get married, so they start buying ornaments and other things like that for the marriage. Right? But if she arranges the marriage, she can't take those ornaments. Any other gifts and all that, that's another thing. But she can't automatically take those because those were arranged for a marriage by the family. Does that make some sense? If they give them to her, that's another thing. But she can't automatically figure, well, they bought this for me for my marriage. But that's for their arrangement. So they arrange the boy, they arrange the gifts, they arrange everything. So she can't automatically decide they're hers. Does that make sense? You know, because it'll just be taken for granted. They're bought for me, so I get them. No, that's only if they make the arrangements. Because if they're making the arrangements, they arrange the ornaments. You make the arrangements, you arrange the ornaments. You know, if they want to give them to you, that's another thing. You can't automatically consider them yours. Okay, is there any questions on this? Otherwise, time is... Okay. And we'll continue in the next Tuesday. Yes, no? Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare